You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Glory, hallelujah, October is here. With that, welcome in to another new episode and a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast analysis on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. I'm exclaiming the fact that it's now October as we chat on this Monday, because October, of course, is when the NBA season officially begins. The regular season, Wednesday the 17th, that's just over 2 weeks away. The Rockets open at home against the Pelicans. But in the more immediate future, they have the preseason opener tomorrow in Birmingham, Alabama, against the Memphis Grizzlies. And if there's one thing you should have learned about the Rockets in the preseason under Mike D'Antoni, while I think you'll see the minutes scaled back a little bit, at the same time, especially now that the NBA preseason is only five games, I don't think that you're going to see that much in terms of saving your regulars. I do think you're going to see, barring injury, Chris Paul, James Harden, most of your big guns out there, because it's about conditioning, it's about getting ready. It's not that the Rockets actually have all that complex of a system to begin with, so there's going to be a lot to look forward to over the next couple of weeks, not just with some of the fringe players competing for spots, which I'm sure in the third and fourth quarters you'll see more of those, but also the regulars. With so few preseason games and such an importance on conditioning, there's less of a gap in terms of the start of training camp to the regular season than ever before, because teams are starting the regular season earlier so that the NBA can reduce the number of back-to-backs throughout the season. Effectively, now that the season extends an extra half month, then that gives more space between games. Well, what that means is that training camp, the preseason, is a little more compressed. So it's not just the guys fighting for roster spots and into the rotation roles that the preseason's big for. You're going to see the mainstays, Chris Paul, James Harden, barring injury, those guys should play a lot of minutes as well. So there's going to be a lot to look forward to, starting with tomorrow against the Grizzlies. And, of course, as we make our way through these next couple of weeks, and just as we would during the regular season, we'll have recaps right after each game, breaking down our usual three-point style, what looked good, what looked not so good, what are the primary takeaways that you should take from whatever happens on the floor beginning tomorrow night. So we have a lot to look forward to in the coming days. For today, I'm going to give you a bit of a primer in terms of what to look for in regards to the spots that are still up for grabs, in my opinion, as the Rockets enter this preseason, beginning again with Tuesday night's game against the Memphis Grizzlies. And then we'll close out the show with one more look at where things stand after a relatively quiet weekend on the Jimmy Butler front, with potential deals between the Rockets and Wolves, or deals, I guess, with the Wolves and anyone else in the NBA with their disgruntled all-star Jimmy Butler. Now, I do want to acknowledge off the shoot that today's show is sponsored by our friends and partners over at Vivid Seats. Download the Vivid Seats app and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $20 off all orders of $200 or more as a new customer. Now, for our first segment in today's show, let's discuss one of the more intriguing things to watch entering the preseason, which is who gets the minutes at the backup center spot behind Clint Capela, because there are so many different directions you could go. Nene is still on the team, but at 36 years old, as Craig Ackerman explained last week, at this point, he's probably more of a bit player than ever before, in terms of he's more around for his experience and effectively almost like an assistant coach in the locker room than he is for whatever he's going to provide on the basketball floor. There still might be a few matchups here and there, maybe the Oklahoma City Thunder with Steven Adams, where he could be useful. But by and large, I think the Rockets want to go younger at that position. And there will be some small ball lineups with P.J. Tucker, even Carmelo Anthony at the five, but I think that's going to be fewer and further between in the regular season. My guess is that it ends up somewhat like last year, and that maybe you see those tuck wagon lineups a lot in the playoffs, especially against the Warriors, but you don't want to necessarily put that level of workload in the regular season, especially when you're asking a P.J. Tucker, a Carmelo Anthony, whoever it may be, to bang against bigger, more physical players over the 82-game grind. I do think the Rockets want to have a more defined backup center behind Clint Capela, but right now there's so many directions they could go. Again, they have Nene, and then they traded for Marquise Chris along with Brandon Knight. Marquise Chris, a lottery pick from 2 years ago, averaged about 8.6 rebounds per game this past year in Phoenix, and they have to make a decision on whether or not to pick up his fourth-year option by the end of this month. So I think they would like input on Chris as soon as possible. And then you've got your young prospects, Isaiah Hartenstein and Joe Chi. One of the more interesting notes that we've heard from the Rockets training camp from Jonathan Fagan, who's been with the team out in Lake Charles. By the way, the Rockets are now back in Houston. The Lake Charles portion of the training camp ended on Saturday. Now, with the preseason beginning, they're back in Houston, except when they're actually traveling two games that are either on the road or, in the case of the Grizzlies, at a neutral site against the Grizzlies in Birmingham, Alabama. But what we heard on Saturday from Jonathan Fagan, he wrote in the Chronicle, Rockets beat writer, that Hartenstein appears to have a decisive lead, at least at the moment, in the battle for the backup center spot. And the reasons for that, well, Hartenstein has looked pretty good, and that's coming off a strong summer league in which he averaged basically a double-double in barely over 20 minutes per game. But Joe Chi has been slowed by an ankle injury. He hasn't gotten much work with the team. And Marquese Chriss, it's not that he's played poorly, but again, it's a new system for him coming off something in Phoenix that was very, very different than what the Rockets want to do. And when you have a five in this Rockets scheme under Mike D'Antoni, you have to be quick in your decision-making. Aside from the obvious athletic requirements, I think quick decision-making is the biggest thing to look for, and that's where Hartenstein and Chi have a leg up relative to Chris, is that they know what the expectations are. They're more comfortable in it, whereas Chris, even though he may have the tools, being a lottery pick from just 2 years ago, and a guy that in theory could be a potential asset as a rim runner, and Amari Stoudemire light, if you will, at least on paper, in this Mike D'Antoni scheme. At the same time, in terms of the decision-making, it's not as easy as it sounds. It's a system in which you have to operate faster than you do in most others around the league, at least in terms of your processing speed. And I think that's what Chris is trying to build. So for now, Hartenstein, who, one of the things I noticed from him in summer league that I liked a lot was his court awareness. For a big, you typically don't see someone at his size, nearly 7 feet tall, that's able to put the ball on the floor, that's aware of where the cutters are, where the shooter's in the corner. That's the kind of, again, to go back to the kind of the processing speed component of this and just general awareness, that's the kind of thing where even if Chris has more athletic gifts, Hartenstein, he's able to see the floor and has a certain feel for the game that gives him a leg up, even if he may not be quite as athletic as a Marquese Chriss. So that's something to keep in mind. I don't think it's fair to compare the two right at this moment, because Hartenstein has had so much time in the system, really a full year since he was drafted over a year ago by the Rockets, but that is something that Chriss is going to have to compete with. So when you're looking at these two guys in terms of the battle, and I would say they're probably at the forefront, because I don't think the Rockets want Nene to win that job at his age. And I think with Joe Chi, he's probably, especially with ankle injury, still a year away. There's still some bulking up that needs to be done there. But with Hartenstein and Chris, who are at the front of the line, that's what Chris is up against. That said, while I think Hartenstein may have a lead right now, I think the Rockets would like for Chris to earn the job sooner rather than later. And the reason for that, to keep in mind, is that by October 31st, the Rockets have to make a decision about whether to give Chris the fourth-year option on his contract, which would be about $4 million for next season. And it's not as easy as it sounds. I know some are going to say, Ben, wasn't this guy a lottery pick? Why wouldn't you want to keep him? Well, it goes back into the luxury tax, and also it goes back into the fact that there's nothing that Chris has really proven in terms of, is he a difference maker on a quality team in the NBA? Hopefully he can be. I'm willing to consider the argument that Phoenix was not a good situation for him or for anyone, but at some point he's got to show it. And this is a very big month for him, because if in this preseason where the games aren't that important, he doesn't flash, then I think the Rockets are going to have to think long and hard about whether it makes sense to pick up that option. Because I know a lot of folks want to think that, worst case, he could be a valuable trade chip. Well, look, I don't care where he was drafted. It's year three. If it's year three and he still can't even be a marginal player in terms of the Rockets aren't even willing to give him 10 to 15 minutes per game on a contender, then how much value does he really have? This is a big preseason because he's got to show it on the floor. And the other fact is that $4 million figure that he would be due for next year if the Rockets pick up his option, keep in mind that the luxury tax impact is a lot more than that $4 million. For perspective, James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony, two of the Rockets' marquee acquisitions this offseason. Actually, let's throw in Michael Carter-Williams as well. Spoiler alert, we'll be talking about Michael Carter-Williams in the second segment of the show in just a few moments. But James Ennis, Carmelo Anthony, Michael Carter-Williams, between the NBA's reimbursements for minimum salary deals, effectively the Rockets are going to be paying $1.5 million for each of those three players. So combined, those three players are going to be making $4.5 million, or I shouldn't say they're going to be making that. That's what the Rockets are going to be paying them once you factor in the league's reimbursements. That is almost the same total as what Marquise Chris's option is at just over $4 million for next season. So no, I don't think it's a given, not just from a roster spot standpoint, but also in terms of the luxury tax. I don't think it's a given that the Rockets will say, well, it's just $4 million, an expiring deal, that's not that much. No, because look what better you can do, especially when you're the Rockets, a team that's really well-liked, and you can get players to take discounted deals for you. No, the Rockets are going to have to see something from Marquise Chris to justify giving him that $4 million, because there's a lot more than $4 million that's on their books in terms of luxury tax impact if they were to pick up that option. But B, there's also so much more you can do with that in terms of the roster spots, potential minimum salaries, deals. There's so much more you can do with that money. So again, I'm not saying that I don't think they're going to pick up the option. I'm just saying that over the next month, that's something that he has got to show on the basketball floor. And while Isaiah Hartenstein, it's nice to hear that he's having a good start to camp, I certainly don't think that it's an insurmountable goal or task, if you will, for Chris to beat him out for minutes. It's just something that he's got to do. And so to me, when I look at the Rockets' roles heading into the preseason, what's up for grabs, that backup center spot is at the forefront of my list. And there's a lot that Marquise Chris needs to show beginning with tomorrow night's game. Now, we'll talk in a few moments about another spot that's there for the taking, most notably with Michael Carter-Williams in the backup guard spot behind Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, and James Harden. But before we get to that, I do want to throw a shout-out to our awesome sponsors over at Vivid Seats, who are responsible for bringing you today's show. And folks, if you want to attend any of the upcoming Rockets games, be it preseason, the first home one is this Thursday at Toyota Center, or regular season games, mentioning the opener on October 17th, that's a Wednesday, or especially the postseason games next April and May, whatever the entertainment event is, and it can also extend well beyond sports, whatever it is, our sponsors at Vivid Seats have you covered. Because with Vivid Seats, it's so easy for you to attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice, and at a great price. That's because Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to, and they make the buying process so remarkably easy. You can sort by price or even look for seats in the specific section and row of your choice. Now, to make things even better and save even more money, Vivid Seats is giving our Locked On Rockets listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off all orders of $200 or more. To take advantage of that, go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. You can also go to vividseats.com and then use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off your orders of $200 or more as a new customer. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. So from the biggest concerts and games all the way down to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. So make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Remember, support our sponsors, download the app, and then enter the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off all of your orders of $200 or more as a new customer. Now jumping back into the program, led off by discussing the backup center battle, which I think is at the forefront of the list, things to watch entering this preseason for the Rockets. Number two on my list, besides, of course, wanting to make sure that all your big guns are healthy, because they are going to play, but ultimately, I don't think you're going to learn that much about Chris Paul, James Harden. I don't think you're going to see Chris Paul hitting the turbo button, James Harden taking a lot of contact, because other than conditioning, these games are not that meaningful for proven all-NBA type players. So in terms of what you can actually keep a close eye on, to me, that's those fringe rotation spots further down the line. One of those, the backup center spot, but the second one, as I alluded to a few minutes ago, is the backup guard spot, the fourth guard, if you will, behind the big three of Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon. And who knows, it could even be the third guard spot if the Rockets end up starting Eric Gordon at the three spot, which, as we discussed last week, appears to be an option. So as far as who that next guard in the pipeline would be, it could be Brandon Knight, but Brandon Knight is going to miss the entire preseason with an infection in his surgically repaired knee. We're going to get a timetable after that, but I would be surprised at this point if he's ready to go from the outset of the regular season, because even if he's cleared, there's still going to be some conditioning that he has to do, especially after missing an entire year of NBA basketball, to try and get back up to speed. So the guy that's next in that pipeline is Michael Carter-Williams. And he's especially viable now because the Rockets traded De'Anthony Melton to Phoenix as part of the Ryan Anderson swap. So with Melton out and with really Brandon Knight on the shelf for the foreseeable future, there's a lot of minutes for the taking. And they also have Rob Gray, but I don't think the Rockets are expecting that much from an undrafted rookie immediately. Michael Carter Williams, I think we all know his story. He's long. He was 5 years ago the NBA's Rookie of the Year. He's got a lot of skills. He can play good defense. But over the course of an NBA career, his shot has become worse and worse. He's a career 25% three-point shooter. It seems to be getting worse with each passing year. The Rockets, as they've done with a few players in the past, they believe that with their shooting coaches that they can work on his mechanics, that they can fix the hitch, if you will. Well, he's going to get an opportunity to show it, because even with Chris Paul and James Harden, even if they play, I certainly don't think you're going to see them playing much more than 25 to 30 minutes in the preseason. There's a lot of minutes there for the taking, and if there are maintenance games for one of those two, then boy, there's going to be a ton of minutes there and not a lot of proven depth, especially with Brandon Knight not ready to go. And from what little we've heard out in Lake Charles from guys like Jonathan Fagan and the Athletic's Kelly Eco that are out with the team, the Rockets have liked what they've seen from Michael Carter-Williams. But when we get into the games, it's going to come down to, can he make enough of the open shots to be respected? If he can, then all of a sudden he becomes very interesting. Now, as far as what to watch for, we'll see what happens with the minutes for Chris Paul and James Harden. You could see, especially with Brandon Knight out, you could see stretches where Michael Carter-Williams is your primary ball handler. In the regular season, that's less important because, assuming health, we all know that Chris Paul and James Harden, the minutes are going to be staggered to where at least one of those guys is out there for all 48 minutes. That's the goal for the Rockets in this era. So while it's nice that Michael Carter-Williams has point guard skills and can handle the ball in a pinch if you need him, it's not really a huge consideration because I don't know how much he's going to be required to be in that role in the regular season. What he's going to be in more in the regular season is, well, obviously as a shooter, that's a big deal for anyone in this system, but also different types of players. Who does he succeed against? Because he's very long, but is he better off? Can he handle both, say, your penetrating smaller point guards and your longer wings? Is there a certain type of player he's better suited to defend or to attack off the dribble? Can he make enough open threes? I know I say that a lot because, well, that's what everything comes back to in this system when you're not Chris Paul and James Harden. But the bottom line for me with Michael Carter-Williams is this. A lot of this, in my opinion, is a mental thing. You don't go from being the NBA's Rookie of the Year to a guy who shot below 30% from the field just because of a mechanical hitch. At some point, his issues weighed on him, in my opinion, because it's very difficult to go from a guy who seemed bound for stardom in his first year, and then all of a sudden to go from that to a guy who now is playing for the minimum and basically fighting for his NBA life. He might look good on the practice court in Lake Charles, Louisiana, but when you're playing against NBA players in an NBA gym, is that going to translate? I hope it can. I think the Rockets, as an organization, can give him a lot more help in terms of confidence, leadership, those types of things than many of his other stops on his now, I'm not sure how many years, but he's been on a lot of teams in the NBA. But the point I'm getting to is that for Michael Carter-Williams, the practice court is one thing, NBA games is another. And he's going to have a massive opportunity for minutes to be sopped up this preseason because really, if not him, who else would it be? There are going to be minutes at the backcourt spots. And if he can show you something offensively, then yeah, that would be great because he can be that second wing defender. We've mentioned before, they brought in James Ennis. They lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Baamute. They think Ennis can replace Ariza. Okay, well, who replaces Baamute? On paper, Michael Carter-Williams, he's very long. He's got great instincts. He can do some really positive things on that end of the floor, but he's got to make enough shots offensively for that to be viable. I know there are some that are skeptical on him. That's why Brandon Knight was lauded as such a huge pickup, because that's a fourth guard that you can actually trust. There's some hesitance to buy in, even with the positive reports to Michael Carter-Williams, based on his history, based on just how poor that jump shot has been. But this is an opportunity for him, and if he can make those shots, if he can appear passable, even if it's a relatively small sample size, I think the confidence boost he could get could be fairly substantial to where it could pay dividends down the road in terms of the Rockets not just having a fourth guard, but even having another wing defender. There's a reason the Rockets have gone after Michael Carter-Williams, been linked to him for 2 or 3 years now. The Rockets believe in his skill set, and I think that at least partially his mechanics can be improved. But I think the other part of the equation is the mental toll, whatever damage has been done to him over a few years of declining production. Can that be offset? Again, you can mount a compelling case for it with the leadership, the stardom, all the infrastructure that's here in Houston, but he's got to show it. Preseason's going to be a massive opportunity for him, especially in the absence of Brandon Knight, and what I'm guessing is at least a little bit of a minutes limitation for Chris Paul. Now, the final segment of the show, I'm going to discuss everyone's favorite topic, which is Jimmy Butler. And I buried this to the final segment because, really, there's not much in the way of new news. If you want a recap of why I think the Rockets are certainly in the game, I strongly encourage you to listen to Friday's show when I laid out the pros and cons, why I think the Rockets do check the boxes in terms of it making sense both for them and Minnesota in a way that it doesn't for many NBA teams. So I certainly think the Rockets are in the mix. But really, it's been almost 2 weeks since Butler formally and publicly issued his trade request. Nothing has happened, and at this point, it seems teams around the NBA, including the Rockets, are waiting on Minnesota's asking price to come down, and perhaps for the head coach and president of basketball operations, Tom Thibodeau, to come into better alignment with the owner, Glenn Taylor, in terms of what exactly they want. So every day on Twitter, I get asked, Ben, what do you think the chances of this deal are? Guys, I have no idea. I don't think anyone really does, not even the Rockets. I think they've discussed parameters with the Timberwolves. I feel confident in saying the Rockets are pursuing it. As Mark Berman said at the end of last week, the Rockets are making a strong effort. But in terms of the likelihood of it actually going down, you'd have to ask someone with Minnesota connections. And quite frankly, even though I'm sure the Rockets have discussed parameters with either Thibodeau or Taylor, hopefully both, at the same time, unless you're a fly on the wall in the Minnesota front offices, you have no idea what their ranking is of these offers, what their criteria are when they make a final decision. So it's almost impossible to say what the chances are. I do think the Rockets are in the game because they're trying, and I think at least on some level they can check all the boxes in terms of both Butler making sense for them and giving something to Minnesota that, in the case of Eric Gordon, is a win-now piece. They do have all their future draft picks as far as future considerations. There are some mechanisms to which either they could take Gorgui Dieng as far as offering the Timberwolves cap relief or bringing in a third team such as Sacramento. There are ways that you can make this work. So I think the Rockets have a chance. What exactly the odds are, I don't know, because my connections are not in Minnesota, and unless you know folks there, it's hard to say what exactly their parameters for a deal are, their criteria, however you want to define it. That said, while we've talked a lot about it Friday, and there haven't really been any new rumors this weekend in terms of any additional traction between the Wolves and the Rockets or anyone else regarding Jimmy Butler. Again, I think it's a waiting game at this point for when they're going to come back to the table and drop their asking price. My guess is they'd like it to be concluded before the regular season, which is just over 2 weeks away, so there could be some relatively quick momentum, I would think, just based on that factor. But again, that's just my supposition. It's not based on anything that I have specifically been told. That said, I do want to throw in a couple of small factors that I didn't mention Friday, but I do think at least provide some encouragement to the Rockets in terms of their odds at getting a deal to the finish line with Minnesota. One of those that I should have mentioned but did not is the Western Conference factor. And one of the things that's been mentioned, and I do think is a real consideration for the Timberwolves in these deals, they don't want to hurt their stature in the Western Conference. Because they signed Karl-Anthony Towns to a Supermax deal. They brought in Luol Deng, Derrick Rose. They might bring in Joaquin Noah as well. They are not suddenly going to rebuild. This was a team that was number three in the Western Conference last year when Jimmy Butler was healthy. So I don't think that then you sign Karl-Anthony Towns to a Supermax deal, making him the focal point of your franchise, that now they want to rebuild. That's not what Tom Thibodeau is about. That's not what their supporting cast is about. So I think they're going to want to win, and there are certain teams, such as the Clippers, who are allegedly on the first list for Jimmy Butler of preferred teams. The Clippers barely missed the playoffs a year ago. Well, if you give Jimmy Butler to the Clippers, that could potentially take a playoff spot from Minnesota, and that's a very real consideration. So that could work to the benefit of Eastern Conference teams, such as Miami. That's been speculated a lot. But it would also, in my opinion, work to the benefit of Houston. Because while Houston is a Western Conference team, there is no scenario, short of a catastrophic season-ending injury to James Harden, by which Minnesota could compete with Houston. Even if they have Jimmy Butler and Houston does not, there is no way that Minnesota is in the same tier as Houston. Not this year and not next year. Now, maybe 3 or 4 years from now, if they get lucky and they build correctly around Karl-Anthony Towns and he keeps improving, you could see a pathway to it. But by that point, Chris Paul is probably going to be on the decline in his mid-30s anyway. As far as the next 2 years, which is what matters, especially with Jimmy Butler on an expiring deal and Chris Paul at 33 years old in his remaining last few prime years, if you will, there is no scenario where Minnesota is going to compete with Houston. And I think they know that, barring just a crazy amount of injuries to, you know, James Harden, Chris Paul, whoever it may be. So while Houston is a Western Conference team, just like Minnesota, they are similar to an Eastern Conference team in that they are not a threat. There are teams that I think Minnesota would ask for a much higher return from, such as the Clippers, because they know they would be making their own math a lot harder to getting back to the playoffs and succeeding the way they want to over the next couple of years. Houston is not one of those teams. So yes, even though Houston is in the West, it doesn't really matter if you're Minnesota whether you give Jimmy Butler to Houston or not, because look, Minnesota is not going to be at the level of Houston or Golden State no matter what they do. There is no reasonable case or argument you could make to put them in that tier. So as far as they're concerned, with Jimmy Butler entering the final year potentially of his contract, he has a player option next summer, I don't expect it to be a hindrance for Houston. I do think it could be a hindrance for teams like the Clippers, and in turn, I do think that boosts the odds just a little bit more for the Rockets, because, again, it's a net negative for a lot of teams that is not there for the Rockets, and that gets back to the whole how many boxes can you check. Well, in my opinion, the Rockets can check a lot of boxes, so that's why I think they're very much in play and viable as a destination. One final note on Butler that I want to throw out there, because it keeps getting mentioned a lot, and that's the salary component. How can the Rockets make this work? Well, for starters, yes, I understand they've given max deals to James Harden and Chris Paul, and they gave a rich deal to Clint Capella. If you bring in Jimmy Butler for this year, you would have to be sending out nearly as much salary as you're taking in. That's the way the collective bargaining agreement works. So there's not going to be much in the way of a difference on the Rockets' books, luxury tax, whatever it may be, this year, because you'd be sending out, again, Eric Gordon makes over $13 million a season if the deal with Eric was to be the one that gets to the finish line. So this year, it would be a non-entity. As far as beyond, yes, the Rockets could financially re-sign him because they would have his bird rights, but beyond the fact that they could, I absolutely think they would. I absolutely think that's the plan. Now, long-term, we heard Tilman Fertitta last week at Media Day. He mentioned a couple of things in regards to luxury tax. He mentioned 5, 10, 15, 20 million, something that small. It's not really going to make, and I say small, I'm using air quotes, because of course it's a big deal to most people, that saying that's not going to make a difference in terms of whether he would authorize an acquisition or not, because he wants to win championships. At the same time, he went on and on about the repeater tax as a major deterrent. So I do think that's something that the Rockets, and that could kick in as soon as the 2020-2021 season, I think that's something that they're keeping in mind. So as I mentioned last week, I think the Rockets are kind of looking at this as a two-year window. Then they'll reassess in the summer of 2020 where exactly they're at. But as far as what that means for Jimmy Butler, look, other than a little bit higher salary when he's due for a raise next summer, and the Rockets, again, would have his bird rights, so they absolutely could give him the raise to the 4 or 5 year max deal that he would be expecting. Even if down the line the Rockets are unwilling to pay three maxes to Chris Paul, James Harden, both of those super maxes, close to $40 million a year, and then Jimmy Butler and Clint Capella, even if the Rockets are not willing to pay all of those, that's no reason to let a player walk now. As long as they have positive trade value later, you can deal with that problem down the road. For example, the case of Clint Capella, will he play all 5 years of his contract in Houston? I hope so, but I don't know. But worst case, even if the Rockets need to clear that salary structure, it's such a good deal that you know Capella would have positive trade value, so you'd be able to offload him into salary cap space, whatever you need to. In the case of Jimmy Butler, I think the same thing holds true. Even if by 2020 or 2021, whatever it may be, the Rockets have a mandate from ownership to cut salary, unless he's going to be a net negative asset, you should be able to move him. There are a lot of teams with cap space, the Sacramentos, the Atlantas of the world, that would kill for a 31, a 32-year-old Jimmy Butler. He'll be 30 when he signs his extension next summer, be it in Houston, Minnesota, or wherever he is. Well, right now, Jimmy Butler is seen as a top 10 player by some. Worst case, I'd say top 15. The SI list that I've referenced on this show the last few weeks had him at number 10 overall. Look, you're not going to go from a top 10, barring a catastrophic injury, from a top 10 player to a negative asset in 2 or 3 years. That seems silly. And while Butler has had some mileage, he's played a little bit higher in terms of minutes, especially under Tom Thibodeau than you would like. The thing to keep in mind is that he really hasn't had that many NBA seasons. He's only had five NBA years in which he's played more than 30 minutes per game. And other than last year, which had kind of the freak meniscus issue in Houston, he's only missed, well, he's played 67 games or more in every other season. So it's not like he has that long of an injury history. It's not like his mileage. Again, he's only had five seasons of 30-plus minutes per game. So has he been played a little more than you would like under Tom Thibodeau? Sure. But is it anything catastrophic? Is it anything incredibly alarming? In my opinion, no. So unless there's an injury that crops up between now and next summer, it's hard for me to see a scenario in which Jimmy Butler goes from a max player, seen by many as a top 10 to 15 in the entire NBA, to such a negative asset that even a Sacramento and Atlanta, a team that's always looking for stars but can't get anyone to sign on the bottom line to go there, that all of a sudden they wouldn't even take Jimmy Butler a couple of years from now. So that, to me, is the prism you need to look at the Jimmy Butler financial math with. Will he have positive trade value? Because, yes, I don't know if the Rockets will pay three maxes to Chris Paul, James Harden, Jimmy Butler, plus the Clint Capella contract long term. I know that's a lot to ask of any owner, even a really good one like Tillman Fertitta. But that doesn't mean, even if you're skeptical of their willingness to do that, that the right play is that, well, he should leave, that the Rockets just let him walk next summer. No, as long as he has positive trade value, you can make it work now, because again, you're not in repeater tax territory. And then down the line, when you would be, if there is a financial constraint, a significant one that you, essentially you have a mandate to work around, then you can deal with that then. And so that's my outlook on Jimmy Butler. I don't think it'd be just for this year. I think the Rockets, if they trade for him, would absolutely have eyes on re-signing him. And as far as would he be there the entire length of the contract, they can figure that out later. One final point. Quite frankly, I don't think it makes sense to do the deal for Jimmy Butler unless you plan on re-signing him. Because while Jimmy Butler is better than Eric Gordon is a really good fit here in Houston. It's tough to get a guy that accepts his role as beautifully as Eric Gordon has these past couple of years, because certainly he's good enough to start a lot of places and be a dynamic player now that he seems to be healthy again. To accept his role in that third or fourth banana spot, that's not easy to do. And while Jimmy Butler makes you better this year, I would not trade 2 years of Eric Gordon plus future first-round picks for 1 year of Jimmy Butler. The gap is not that big. I would do this deal if you're going under the assumption of Jimmy Butler being there at least as long as Eric Gordon would be. Now, I understand that it's not all within your control. Theoretically, Butler could still choose to leave, but I have a hard time seeing him doing that because the Rockets could offer him more money than anybody else because they'd have his bird rights. It'd be a winning situation, which I'm sure they'd be competing for a title. It's hard to see Butler walking away from that situation. If that happens, it sucks, but you know that wasn't your choice. But in terms of the design for the Rockets, the thought process, I don't think Butler is so good that you do Gordon plus other assets just for the sake of 1 year of Jimmy Butler. No, I think you do it so that Butler is at least on the same timetable as Gordon in terms of at least through 2020. And then after that point, we'll see if the Rockets have won any titles. We'll see what the revenues are, the salary streams, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll see if it makes sense for the Rockets at that time. But to me, if the Rockets do a deal for Jimmy Butler, not only can they re-sign him, I think it's very likely that they would re-sign him. To me, that would be the plan. I don't see a scenario where the Rockets are looking at this as a rental. Now, Daryl Morey might have a few leaks to the media in which they allude to the rental possibility, because quite frankly, it makes sense. If you're the Rockets, you want to use all the leverage that you can, and Minnesota, with an asking price as high as it is, if you make it clear that you think you can re-sign Butler, then that makes it all the easier for Minnesota to command the moon in return for him. So I think you have to play up the fact that he could be a rental to kind of drive down the asking price. But in terms of what the Rockets' actual plan is, if they trade for Jimmy Butler, I don't think they're looking at him as a rental. I think they're looking at re-signing him to the max next summer. And can they pay it long-term? I don't know, but I think that's a conversation that we can have in 2020 or 2021 rather than next summer when Jimmy Butler presumably becomes a free agent with his player option. So with that, we'll wrap up today's show. As always, thanks to you guys, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. You want more content in the interim, please check out our archives, because you can find those iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. You can check out all of our past shows. Now that we're Daily Shogun, we've had lots of recent content. So wherever you go, check out our archives, subscribe to us. That's how you get alerts right when they come out. And if you want even more content than that, follow us on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben DuBose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, on the subject of the platforms, I should have also mentioned that leave us a 5-star review, because that's how we look attractive to potential advertisers, just like our sponsors at Vivid Seats today. Remember, download the Vivid Seats app, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you can get $20 off all orders of $200 or more as a new customer. But yeah, as far as the platforms, subscribe to us, leave us the 5-star review. That's how you'll get episodes right when they come out. And also, on those same platforms, you can find our other sister shows across this great Lockdown Podcast Network that include the Lockdown Texans podcast and the Lockdown Aggies podcast. It's a good weekend in football around Houston. A&M beat Arkansas 24-17 on Saturday. Texans got their first win 37-34 over the Colts on Sunday. So if you want to hear more about either of those games, again, Lockdown Texans, Lockdown Aggies, same networks that you can find Lockdown Rockets, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, etc., etc. And of course, if there's any breaking news, I mentioned Twitter. I'm at Ben DuBose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. That's the best place to hear from me if there's any sort of breaking news, be it with Jimmy Butler or anything else surrounding the Houston Rockets. So for today, this will do it. Again, thanks for tuning in and listening, and we'll be back tomorrow night as we have our first postgame recap with the preseason beginning, Rockets versus Grizzlies in Birmingham, Alabama. Until then, enjoy the start to your week, and thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.